PFT Media.
Save up your nickels and dimes, because we are checking out capitalism, its origins, and just how much the man who wrote about it knew about industry. It's Half True History coming up. Welcome to Half True History, where we take the legends of yesterday, merge them with the facts of today, and come up with a pretty decent story to catch your interest. I am your professor for the night, Dan P. And controlling our airwaves is, as always, super producer Chris Crespo.
What up, fellas?
With the gorgeous hair.
Oh, thank you so much. You got a great head of hair too, buddy. Look at that thing.
Yours is flowing, though.
Yeah, but yours has that great Afro thing that I always wanted going on. I appreciate that.
And then, of course, the Alexander Hamilton to my national bank, Pedro Lima.
What up, people? You know, I like Crespo looks like Jesus if he wasn't crucified and he was given free form to the White Castle.
I look like Jesus lost his battle against carbs.
Yeah. You look like Jesus says, you know what? I'm done with saving. I'm just going to chill now.
You look like he turned your
going to enjoy that.
You look like you turned your flesh into bread.
Yes. Yes. I'm that Jesus who turned the water into Coke. I'm like, give me that soda. Yeah. Like wine. I need sugar.
That corn syrup of the Holy Trinity.
Oh, man, that just reminded me of Honey Boo Boo. How's she doing? Did she lose a foot yet?
I thought she... Oh, isn't that the daughter? Which one's that? Is that the mom?
Honey Boo Boo's the daughter.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Has anyone checked on her lately?
Yeah, the little one that would get all excited, she would get a Mountain Dew or something like that. Mm-hmm. The mom is the one that, you know...
What dated pederast.
Yeah, which is she. Let me just stop right there. I don't want to do fat shaming or anything like that. But her face was just awkward looking. She looked like that king of the Jar Jars.
Oh, the Gungas or Boss Nass. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, the Gungas. Like
that dude. Yeah.
Well, that was they were super popular for a hot minute, and it was all in the name of making a ton of money.
The Gungans.
The Gungans and the Honey Boo Boos. Yeah. They're cousins, the Honey Boo Boos.
Yeah, the Honey Boo Boo. Every minute, Honey Boo Boo is like, I don't want to be on TV anymore. And the mother's like, no, you got to be on TV. This is how we make money. Everybody from that network, remember Kate plus eight? Mm-hmm. She had the husband she would berate, and then, God forbid, the guy decides to leave her.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Just because she spawned out a kid. It's like, how dare he leave? Like, did you not see how that woman treated the dude?
And they put it out there for all of us to see.
Yep. Yeah, dude. In some way, he was rocking Affliction, you know, Ed Hardy shirts, being a mid-crisis douchebag. Good for you for leaving that chick.
Man.
And then the Duke, and what network is that? Is that A&E or is that?
A&E or, no, it was Bravo.
Was it Bravo?
Was it Bravo?
It was either A&E or Bravo.
TLC, sorry. It was TLC.
All right. Yeah, no, that's the type of crap for TLC.
There
yeah.
you go. That used to be the Learning Channel.
The Learning Channel, right.
Yeah, we learned a lot. Yeah, we learned a lot about... A lot of trash does Caucasian.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
We learned that the Duggars, remember the Duggars, the Mormons that would have a kid every half hour like gerbils? Mm-hmm. And then one got arrested for being a pedo. I love the decline. I just
we got to start seeing the patterns better.
Is there a pattern?
We got to really start noticing the patterns. I don't know, like, you know,
is it the fame seekers?
Everybody who is known and famous because of children and their love of them. Like, there's definitely a pattern there.
There has to be.
Octomom. What the hell is Octomom? Last thing I saw, she posted on Playboy.
That was a while ago. I think she's I think she backed away and just tried to be a mom.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, get that money, get that college cash.
But she was from that same time period of like
mm-hmm. of crazy. Is yeah, that, yeah. that there was a nice bucket of crazy.
Mm-hmm. That was crazy. What the heck was that?
It was the writers going on strike.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That sucked.
Yeah. And then they were like,
everybody doing that. What is that thing? They couldn't have babies, so let me inject you with this. And instead of having one baby, you're going to have 17 in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Octomom. Yeah. I think that's what they call that now.
Mm-hmm.
Octomom. But I think she lost the record. Some lady had 9 or some shit like that. Yeah. It got real competitive, this multiple baby shit.
Because once someone saw there was money to be made in it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it was a weird thing. It's amazing what people will do for money. Like, money is easily the greatest motivator, I think, in world history.
It's the biggest corrupter.
Mm-hmm. It will do. I mean, money is more, we know money is more powerful than religion.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. And
me and Sanchez read the same book, The Green Pope, they call it.
Okay. Yeah.
In Puerto Rico, they call it the Green Pope because it's the money. Mm-hmm. Whoever got the money got the power.
And money is more powerful than race, ethnicity, all of that. I mean, there are so many samples in history of the wealthy class betraying their country in order to keep their spot with the invaders.
You want to keep that income bracket. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Think about it. What's more powerful? Is it more powerful being either president of the United States or the richest man in the United States or in the world for that matter?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, look, we have two presidents, and Bezos is getting divorced, and what he pays in divorce is more than two of the richest people combined kind of deal.
Pays his ex-wife our Veterans Affairs budget for the year.
Oh my God, dude. Then Gates like, oh, Bezos got divorced? I gotta get divorced.
I gotta show him up. I gotta Octomom him.
Well, I'll leave Bezos doesn't have a bunch of pictures with Epstein haunting him at the moment. That's a the calls for his divorce. Know what I'm saying?
That's a new one. Are there real pictures or did they?
Oh no!
They photoshopped in there. It's technology.
No. These are real pictures of Bill Gates hanging out with Epstein. Yeah.
Do for that money. A bunch of that influence.
So much money.
Yeah, but it's so weird because obviously people are going to go after base, look at this creep and be like, and it's the same person that you'll be like, yeah, but did you see Trump? Oh, no, but that's different.
Mm-hmm.
They were just mingling at the time. It's like, Clinton's in that shit.
They got that weird painting of him in a dress, in Monica's dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Creepy, weird. No, no, thank you.
Mm-mm. That's what it does to you, though. Like, and it's just the wealthy class really, once they see how invincible they are, you know, for that long period of time, they go to the point where they push the boundary to see what will get them caught. I think it's a subconscious thing.
Oh, they keep pushing that envelope. Let me see. You know what? I was talking to a friend of mine about that. It probably started. It's like, yo, I slept with this 18-year-old, and they're so rich. Some guy said, oh, but I went to this country 17. Oh, and then some other country 16 is legal. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, 16 is great. And then here came this rich asshole that said, well, I went here, and let me tell you where it's at. 14 and 13-year-olds. And the rich people just said, let's bang it out. Let's find out. And they just treat it like super expensive caviar.
Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about the godfather of the modern wealthy class. The inventor.
Warren Buffett.
Yeah, the inventor of capitalism, Adam Smith.
Okay.
Adam Smith, for those of you who don't know, is a Scottish Enlightened philosopher during the Enlightenment period, the 1750s to 1770s era. And his greatest contribution to Enlightenment literature was The Wealth of Nations. And here is where he lays the foundations for what will become capitalism. The idea of, and he bases the idea of economics really off what a lot of philosophers were doing, which was government having a reduced influence on everything.
Laissez-faire economics?
Lazier than laissez-faire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Because with laissez-faire, the government gives tax breaks. He was all hands off.
Anarchist capitalism?
Very much so. Yeah, okay. Very much so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a popular thing amongst most of the Enlightened philosophers because most of them were living under these absolute monarchs. So, of course, their reaction was, let's get as free as possible. I bet you that's the better scenario. So, yeah, it was the idea. Yeah, this idea of he really believed that the economy would balance itself by basically this invisible hand, which was what a lot of Enlightened philosophers believed in. Their religion was deism, which was a very karma-esque belief of the supreme power that created a natural balance. And no matter what happened, the balance would always return.
So just expecting like the market's needs would be filled by, people's needs will be filled by the people with the money, the employers essentially, right? It's like trickle-down economics, isn't it? Just saying that the wealthy are going to provide if we let them?
It focused a lot on private charities funding things, a lot less on taxes. He truly believed that the less taxes people paid, the more money they would have to spend and get the economy actually moving. And so that was where he was going with it. And yeah, he believed that private charities and organizations should be offering, and businesses should be competing. There shouldn't be monopolies. He was very anti-monopoly because this is compete. The belief was that customers will get the best product at the lowest price. Okay. Or whatever product for that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Like at the lowest price, there's a level where the price gets so low that the product gets bad or the worker gets exploited. Right.
But here's the thing with the whole no taxes and stuff like that. But who's gonna pay for the road work, or who's gonna pay for like the public buildings and stuff? Because nobody's willingly saying, you know what, let me give this money for the roads. No, everybody's selfish for their own thing. So
now, here is his proposal on that. He actually has it written down. So Wealth of Nations is actually five books put together. It's an anthology, each one with a different theme. And book three talks a lot about taxes. He believed that there should be a general fund. So there should be some tax and a general fund to upkeep the roads of the major parts of the cities themselves. But any road out of there should be a toll road, and people should pay a toll to upkeep and maintain it. And they should upkeep and maintain it according to the type of carriage they were using, because that would determine how much damage it would do to the road.
But then, who are they paying? Is there now then like a private company running the road that's then collecting these tolls to use for repairs?
If that is a possibility, I believe Smith really came down to it being a government service, so it still was a tax, but at least the people who didn't travel didn't have to pay the tax.
Gotcha. Yeah,
okay. So you only paid for the services that
we know how calm the Europeans are and be like, a toll road, get out of here. I'm going to eat right through this.
So that,
I'm going to make my own road.
What I love,
and then who's going to enforce
it? Who's going to enforce it? And plus, how long is this going to take? What magical abacus do you believe everyone has in their head that is going to figure out the weight, the damage, the long term, like as they're going through each bridge? Yeah. You're going to have to wait while this guy does, an accountant at the base of the bridge is going to tally you up first.
And yet,
you get the carnival guy, the guy that guesses the weights.
Right.
That guy is good. He'll get it within 20 pounds every time. He's good.
So good.
He's very good. But we do sort of do that now when a car pulls up to a toll booth and it's like, oh, two axles, four axles. You're doing
right.
Your whole truck. So they do.
So yeah, there's a system there.
Yeah, sure. That does.
And I understand that. We weigh our trucks, our moving trucks too.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we have that technology now.
Yeah, how do they do it then?
This guy wanted carts weighed in 1775.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if that carnival barker was around back then, like guessing people's weights.
That looks like 6 pounds or 6 stones.
It looks like you have about 4 horses there, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he believed that people should pay for the services. Everyone should be allowed these services, but you should be paying for extra services because you didn't want to burden the general welfare of the population. So even education, he believed that there was a rudimentary level that could be covered by the government. But after that, you would need to pay for more. You would pay your tutor or you would pay this professor personally for whatever services or for even better services.
So the rich get smarter, they get better education.
Absolutely. It's like, hey, everyone gets long division. You want Algebra 2? That's $50 a month more.
No, I'm good with division.
Yeah, that's what they did. Or that's what he believed they should do. And capitalists and socialists are very interesting. And this was Smith's idea of why. And capitalists and socialists both base their entire economic beliefs off distrust, but for the other side.
Yeah, the other side has the worst intentions. Mm-hmm. A socialist is the lazy person who wants to mooch off the government and everyone else's labor. The capitalist, though, is the person who wants to exploit the worker at all costs, even at like the loss of humanity and whatnot. There's no middle ground between
them. He believed
the hard worker.
He believed teachers should be paid like car salesmen today. Everyone gets this basic salary from the government. But if you want to make some money, you've got to sell yourself and you got to get some extra students and sell some extra lessons. Because he said if everyone had a guaranteed comfortable salary, we would not get the best production out of them. They would take advantage of the
system. A motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little motivator.
Right.
About, hey, I showed up today.
Hey, I don't know about you, Pedro, but I don't know, Pedro. I would not trust you as a worker if you were making enough to get all the rest you needed, all the exercise you needed, all the minimal luxuries that you could make you happy. I wouldn't trust you as a worker to come in and do a good job.
It's amazing that we even have a school system.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm amazed at people that actually want to be teachers. Knowing the shithole business you're getting yourself into.
It's been a nightmare this year.
Well, It also depends on the state you're working in. When you're doing it in Florida, you're doing the Lord's work, like Dan is when you're working in Florida. If you're working somewhere in New Jersey where they have unions, it's like a career with actual retirement options. Yeah.
Unions, I'm pro union.
Oh yeah. Oh. No, you got to have someone in your corner. And he even says that in his Wealth of Nations. He acknowledges that when it comes to bargaining, the wealthy and the bosses always have the advantage over the worker because there are so few of the elite, they can come together to a consensus faster than all the workers.
And there's so many workers.
Right.
Yeah.
And when they come together, they'll have more money and more affluence and more power, so they'll always crush them. He even admits that the employers always have the advantage in the bargaining.
So the only workers, only their best chip is to band together, organize together, like in an official way where they can have like a few spokespeople, a spokesperson, a union, right. If they can union.
The union.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you see, when he's writing this, he's a very utopian person, you know, and just like the early socialists, he was very utopian. He truly believed that if he laid down these laws, everyone would follow them and everyone would be happy, which I'm sure they would if everybody followed his rules. Because his rule said the price of your worker needs to be the expense of their living.
So a living wage.
Yeah, exactly. Like if your worker is not able to cover his basic needs and a little bit more to make him happy, then you are not paying him enough.
But so, people don't do that, though.
He was, you know, he was assuming that, you know, that the owners and factory owners would take savings as they could and give it to their workers or to expanding and bettering the company, not really foreseeing that most of the time it just ends up in their pockets. And that's interesting why we're going to get to the half true history part of this at the end here, though, too, and why. So he, you know, he's got that lock on. What's interesting about his version of Wealth of Nations and how Wealth of Nations in general is considered the book of capitalism, right? So the book comes out in 1775, 1776. Okay, that's significant because it's supposed to be the authority on the working class and the welfare systems and all that stuff. It's supposed to be the authority of how the economy is supposed to work. The steam engine was invented only 2 years before that. We're going off the economic theories of a man who was just seeing the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And...
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Like...
So before the whole globe.
Right. Before the factories, before the whole...
He was really thinking local.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy was born 100 years before John D. Rockefeller.
It's amazing how people just.
What are we saying? This is amazing that what?
It just things that people just cling to. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They hold that book like, oh, look, this is.
Right.
But they don't see, look, but also, this is before.
Because they don't know the context. That's why they don't know.
It's like saying, you know, it's like saying that it's like saying the definitive book on computers was written by Alan Turing and that's it.
Yeah, because he was at the birth of computers.
Right. Like, yeah. He's not in the age of the supercomputer. He's not in the age of the personal computer. I mean, he's significant towards it. But yeah, it's Smith is writing as the industrial age is just beginning and he dies before the 1800s.
Wow. And people just clinged into that book.
Mm-hmm. Because they like the idea of it's my money and I want it now. And so, you know, they always they talk about Smith as a superior writer compared, you know, he understood things compared to Karl Marx or something, but Karl Marx was actually in the industrial age. He was actually seeing it.
He saw the effects of capitalism.
Right.
Yeah.
They were still in the cottage system when Adam Smith was writing.
The what system?
The cottage system, which was basically before the real big factories came, you would take all of your raw materials of your business and you would bring it to this, to a cottage. And all the ladies of the town would help you make it. And then you would come back at the end of the week and pick up the, whatever they made.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just the end of the cottage system, beginning of the industrial age. This is why I'm so skeptical about Wealth of Nations, because like I said, it's an outdated book.
Clearly.
Yeah. It was outdated then.
Yeah. It was like picking up Windows 95 for dummies now.
It's like the guy that brought horses. Let me tell you about this new horsing technology. And here comes races Ford or whatever the
Benz's automobiles. Yeah, and the Ford automobiles. Yeah.
This is why horses are the greatest transportation.
Mm-hmm. And he has also, when he's writing this, there are no republics. There's no republics. There are no democracy. They are all absolute monarchies, maybe some constitutional monarchies. But for the most part, they're rebelling against the system of the past and not adjusting. He's not a futurist writer. He doesn't understand how this is going to go when the people have control of the government. So, yeah, it calls into question whether or not this thing is even suitable for us, which is a wholesale republic in a highly industrial age.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for a sense, the idea of capitalism makes somewhat, but it's like everything else. It has to have a balance.
Mm-hmm.
I sell this and I get this back and whatever I want to do with my money. But when do taxes start coming into play here, Dan?
Well, I mean, taxes have always been part of the governments. Ever since there were governments, there were taxes.
Ever since, or a crown even to pay your royalties or your fealties or whatever.
Tithes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but but when do the whole taxes to this will be applied to this and this will be applied for
taxes for public good.
This is where we're okay. So yeah, in the 1700s, taxes are being levied onto people, and it is paying mostly for the it's being paid mostly for the armies and navies. So it's upkeeping your protection.
So
it's kind of like the first area of where the taxes come in.
So military industrial complex.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. Now, as far as taxes going to sewer systems, the police, a fire department,
mm-hmm.
all of that doesn't come until the mid to late 1800s. And it's the unions who fight for all that stuff. Because, you know, using Adam Smith's no holds barred, we're having apartments, buildings that are built in slums with cheap materials, and there's no law that says they have to have plumbing or sewage.
That's crazy. No, yeah, I mean, I guess it takes people have to build the buildings first, and then people have to live in them for mm-hmm. for others to realize, oh wait, shouldn't there be plumbing here
for
there are hundreds of people living here?
Mm-hmm. There are no restrictions, and when there are no restrictions, they're going to save as much money as they can.
Sure. The idea that like the landowners or building owners, property owners would like pony up the money to quote, fix the roads or anything.
Right.
It's a little absurd. They would just be like, no, you can just walk through the potholed roads to get to your jobs that you should be happy to have.
So here's the kicker. It's basically why was Adam Smith so optimistic about them? And one of the reasons is he's a very sheltered person. He lives in a very sheltered world. He is a college professor pretty much his entire life. He's not a businessman. He's an economics professor, which is one of the reasons why he wants to charge his students more per lesson. Surprise, surprise. Now, when he dies, he orders that all his personal papers be destroyed because he doesn't want people looking into his personal life. But of course, there are people who write about meeting him and being with him and describing his personality. And here's where it starts to make sense. Why does this person not understand the social cues of society? Is that they would talk about how he would daydream many, many times. Wherever he was, or wherever he was working, all the books were stacked neat and organized together and in a descending or ascending order. He has these, he never really connects emotionally with any women or such. And a lot of this stuff lines up with today's Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like he's on the spectrum for sure.
He's autistic. He didn't have any social cues. He didn't know how society was going to actually work. He only knew how society should work.
He looked at it so factually.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. It's fascinating. Yeah. And it's something that we are like still trying to gain understanding of, and
absolutely,
we've only put a name to it recently, and mm-hmm. and even culturally, we've only stopped laughing at that name like maybe 10 years ago, and we finally gotten over that as you know juveniles. It's
We realize it's just a different way of thinking. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Yes. Back then, though, it's like, this guy, there's something up with this guy. He's really weird. It's fascinating, right, though, that people would, in their encounters with him, would document his way of, like, organizing his space and everything. I guess it was, even then, still, I guess maybe even more so unusual to see someone so, like, exacting and thinking in that way. I don't know.
Right, he always let his books speak for him. He was a horrible public speaker. He hated speaking in public. So
sure.
He barely spoke. He was always the quiet person at the party.
You probably couldn't look people in the eye when he spoke to them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely not. This is like, it's, and there's been a few papers that have been circling around pretty recently within the last 10 years talking about a connection between Adam Smith and autism.
Oh, that's cool. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, when you get down to it, yeah, you look at Wealth of Nations and you kind of question its credibility because it's not written timely and it's written by someone who thinks like a very, like a smaller percentage of the world. Very logically, very organized.
Which can be a valuable way to look at the world, but it's not the whole picture though.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
So... yeah, and that was Adam Smith.
Wow, crazy. Not him crazy. I'm just, that's fascinating. I had no idea. I didn't know. It's the first time I'm hearing of this connection.
He was calculating, that dude. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and we're making a lot of connections. You know, we're doing a lot more with mental health and making connections to historical figures and stuff, too, in general. And, you know, in his mind, I'm pretty sure capitalism definitely worked in his mind.
Everything has a good idea. Like even the idea of socialism
mm-hmm.
sounds great, but on the flip side, you know what I mean?
There's always the welfare queen to ruin it for every side.
Correct.
Right. It's either it's in the form of, well, I'm already getting paid, so I want to do it, or let me see how little I can pay my workers so I can make as much money as possible.
This is the one thing I remember was that we started talking about Bezos. And remember, he wanted to go to New York,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't want to pay taxes. So Cuomo was like, oh, fine. And they AOC goes, wait, no, what do you mean come here and pay no taxes?
Mm-hmm.
No, you pay taxes. And I was surprised how many people go, oh, that's going to cost jobs and blah, 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 blah. I'd be like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So you rather the people that are going to be paid the least amount of money be taxed out of their ass and have them pay.
Mm-hmm.
And other business owners that have cities, I mean, have business in the cities, they have to pay taxes. But this asshole... in there and just no, come on, man. He can afford the taxes.
every early capitalist, not just Smith. There's another one, David Ricardo, who's writing a few years later, who basically says you can't avoid paying them a minimum wage because soon nobody can afford your product and everyone falls.
Yeah.
Yeah. If your workers are working 80-hour weeks to barely get by to pay the landlords, what money do they have left over to pump into the economy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they're dying in the restroom, did you read about that?
No, I didn't read about this.
Alabama, the one that they didn't get the union.
Uh-huh.
A worker died in the restroom.
Of course. Bladder exploded or?
That's what I'm guessing. They haven't released.
Yeah, because they don't allow them to use the bathroom or some crazy.
Right, you can't. You can barely take them out.
It's insane. It's
because of the tight schedule they have them on.
Mm-hmm. My buddy works at used to work at the Amazon in Deltona.
Okay.
Or Daytona, one of those Tonas. And yeah, he's telling me how strict it is and how they have snitches whose job is to, you know, snitch and
that money.
Yeah.
I'll take a snitch job. Can I get a snitch job? That sounds like fun. I'm like, yo, Billy, he was totally trying to smoke a cigarette in the bathroom 10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Bust him.
He's fired. There's no warning.
I'm good at that.
They get fired. So they
get fired right off the bat.
Because there's some. It's so weird.
You know, there is philanthropy out there. We're not saying that every businessman is a heartless bastard, but you don't make that much money without stepping on some toes.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favorite modern quotes, was during the Democratic primaries from Bernie Sanders, of course. But it was Bloomberg saying, I've made $9 billion. And Bernie said, you didn't make $9 billion. Your workers made you $9 billion.
Oh, burn.
Yeah.
Feel the burn.
But it's true. It's like, and Adam says it too. Like Adam really, really thought this was going to work out. He was like, you owe them for your product. You owe them a percentage of your product even.
Because he was looking at it so logically, he understood the role of the worker.
He in his mind of a perfect business, each worker would have some company stock.
Yeah.
Okay. You saying that, and that's something that, and I hate that I'm bringing this guy's name up. Gary Vee. He brings that up. He goes, the problem now is that you have workers, and workers are always going to be looking somewhere else. When you hire somebody, you want them to be part of the company. You want them to if you, like, you treat something more with love and respect and if you own a piece of it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
With the success of the company, I give something in return. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of these companies that you can work as hard as you are, but you're just going to make that money. But the company made this money. You'll get a little bit bonus sometime in April when we release the bonus thing. But
mm-hmm. Smith had argued. He's like, the demand for the worker also goes up when the demand for the product goes up. Yeah, they're interlinked. And it's true. I've never understood capitalism. Maybe it's just how my mind works too. Because they always tell you, oh, supply and demand, supply and demand, supply and demand. No one ever told me why. Why does it have to go up in price? Well, because there's less of it. So what?
Spinners was supply and demand. Remember that? Remember those stupid little things on the fingers? Yep.
That's how you get bubbles.
It's like, so you're...
bubbles burst.
We're rewarding the richest with supply and demand, but we're not rewarding the fastest.
Yeah. Smoothie shops. Oh, remember yogurt shops?
Mm-hmm.
Those trends.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pinkberry.
Yeah, everybody was opening up their own yogurt place.
I love those yogurt places.
Meanwhile, TCBY was like, we've been here, guys.
Where you been? We're here at every turnpike.
You've been here for decades. What's going on?
Yeah, I miss TCBY.
Mm. Yeah.
When I used to go to Miami, stop by at that turnpike.
Mm.
And get it.
Carvel next to us. That was the best.
Oh, Carvel's the best. I love Carvel.
Dude, we don't have a Carvel, do we?
Nope.
No. They sell the cake to Publix, but that's it.
There's one in Staten Island we used to go to, a little one. Oh, loved it. So good.
There's one in the Bronx.
Okay.
And it's like the legit Carvel. I know what you're talking about, Crespo. The legit Carvel.
Yeah, the little ones. You walk in there and.
And you can get soft serve. You can get soft serve.
Mm-hmm. Those, the New York, New Jersey Carvels are where they're at.
Yeah. Everything else is like, oh, the cakes. But what, you guys don't do the ice cream thing? No, we don't do ice cream. They look at you like you're weird asking them. That's like going to Baskin Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let me get a scoop. A scoop? What? No, we just do cakes.
Yeah, no, we had one of the old ones, the softy machines and everything that scoops. And it was awesome.
See, now I'm going to go online and maybe I can get Amazon to send me some soft serve Carvel ice cream.
Crespo, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. Listen. Let's bundle up our money together.
Okay.
Let's open up a small little Carvel shop right next to Copper Rocket.
Okay.
Because we can rock this, dude. If White Castle, the shittiest burger out of all the shittiest burgers out there, can have a two-hour, I'm going to say this again, a two-hour wait on the drive-thru.
We should do the same with Carvel.
Yo, we would kill with Carvel, son.
All right. I'll look into franchising. I'll see how much it costs.
We're not selling cakes, though. You know what? Yeah, we sell cakes.
Yeah, but we'll sell all of it.
No, we sell Fudgy, Fudgy the Whale, and Cookie Puss. Those are the only two cakes that we will sell.
Yes, and we also have to sell the ice cream, the cookie sandwiches that they do.
That's legit.
Okay, all right. I'll cut this part of the podcast out, and then I'll mail it to ourselves, so we'll copyright it.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. Well, this has been a great money-making podcast. We've learned a lot about
capitalists.
Oh, yeah. What are we paying our workers? $10 an hour, right?
$10 an hour.
Let's see how the sales first go.
I mean, that's a couple bucks over minimum wage, so I feel like we're very generous. We're
going to work the machines for a few months.
For a while.
I'm going to wheeze the juice, man.
Right.
Be yelling at Chris, stop eating the sandwich.
You think I look like Jesus opened an ice cream shop now? You just wait.
Thank you all of us. Thank you for tuning in to Half True History. Please make sure you check out all of the PFT shows, all going strong in face of a deadly plague. And for Chris Crespo, Pedro Lima, and myself, this has been Half True History, and we'll see you on the next page.
Peace.
A PFT Media production.